In the summer of 1976, I took a car trip from England, where I was living, to Ireland. England that summer had experienced a drought and a heat wave, and there was a month and a half where the temperature was above 90 degrees. People were passing out all over the country from the heat. The green fields had turned to baked brown, and the only positive portion of I can say about that summer is the wine turned out good. It seemed to be a good time for a trip, so I took my 1971 Volvo and my dog, and I visited this wasn't the same dog. I visited about as far south in Ireland as was possible due to the IRA bombing campaign at that time in England and Ireland. We took the overnight ferry from Wales to Cork, and it was the first thing that struck me was the green. As you can see in the two pictures, the green of the countryside was a green velvet, like a pool table. To understand Irish spirituality in some ways to understand the green that is Ireland and the Irish. But to understand Irish spirituality, you have to understand what is meant by spirituality. Now, what I understand as spirituality is to feel something greater than yourself. We each experience that differently. So what at sometimes in worship would be spiritual for some will not be for others. The word spirit comes to us from the Latin spiritus, which means vigor, and from the Greek, which means breath. But spirituality is hard to define and harder still to create. We can create a condition in which spirituality may flourish, but we all can't necessarily experience it. It depends on your emotional state, and which is generated in part by the music, part by memories, and part by your own history. Let me tell you a story that may point out what spirituality is. The Hazelden Foundation at Center City, Minnesota, was a center for recovery from substance abuse. It was the center that was associated with Betty Ford, the wife of the former president. The center employs a 12-step program that Alcoholics Anonymous uses. Now, some years ago, a student offered a presentation on this 12-step spirituality. As he was laboring to make his point about the pervasive nature of spirituality, one of the participants asked for an image. "Give me a picture that would express what you're trying to tell me," she said. "What is it like?" she asked. Her expression was earnest and intent. "I think I understand what you mean by spirituality, but give me a picture of it." Momentarily stumped, the presenter thought for several frustrating moments in silence in the whole room. Staring across the conference lounge at a large, massive stone fireplace, so fashioned out of the rocks deposited in the locality by Minnesota's glacial era. The late afternoon sun, as it is here, would be streaming into the room, warming the sun with its light, and suddenly the stones themselves came into focus. The deep reddish rocks, flaked with gold mica specks, the green-hued pieces, the irregular marbled in white, the many shaded blue slabs, and the shallow nicks sparkling as if they were silver. Which of these stones, he thought, truly represented spirituality? The physical, the mental, the spiritual. The phrase reverberated in his mind, but which the rocks provided the best image of this reality, he thought. The workshop participants, ever polite and patient, shifted quietly in this rare silence. Then suddenly the image came. Looking at the stones and wondering at their beauty, the presented images made one of those gestalt switches. He saw not the individual stone, but he saw the chimney itself. the mortar, that bland, grayish, pebbly stuff that held the stones together. This was the spiritual. The spiritual was not a separate category, not one specific type of stone or a particular stone of great beauty, but the substance that holds it all together. He said the spirituality is the mortar in the fireplace, breaking the moment of silence. Just as the mortar makes the chimney a chimney and allows it to stand straight and tall, beautiful in its wholeness, the spiritual is what makes us truly human. It holds our experiences together, shapes them into a whole, and gives us meaning, and allows us and them to be whole. Without the spiritual, however physically brave or healthy or strong as we may be, however mentally sharp or clever or brilliant we may be, we are somehow not fully all there. Spiritual would be what held those facts and facets of Celtic or Irish culture together. Now, many of you can say whether something was spiritual, but few can say how to make something spiritual, and I think that's probably pretty common. Prior to Patrick, there was spirituality in Ireland. It was a Druid spirituality that recognized a certain tie for the land, the green land, and an egalitarian sexuality. People were equal in Ireland. This pagan spirituality was reflected in the various ceremonies and celebrations that marked the season. Their calendar was divided into two parts, the dark part and the light part. And four great feasts marked their year. The light part was Beltane and Lusadne, May 1st and August 1st. Beltane, or May Day, was the first day of the light part of the year. Cattle were driven through great bonfires to protect them and ensure fertility, and young couples jumped through the fire in order to marry. Lonasky marked the beginning of the festival and celebrates the victory of the god Lu against the earth spirits that would keep the harvest. Lu was very much a Christ figure in their mythology and would die for the sake of humans, pierced and hung from a tree. The dark part of the year featured Samhain, or November 1st, our Halloween, which was the Celtic New Year, marks the end of the harvest and that beginning of that dark part of the year. At this time, all fires were extinguished and you were relit from a central bonfire. This day was the gap in time and consciousness when travel between the worlds time was possible. The other feast was Imbolc, or February 1st, which became St. Bridget's Day and marks the first day of spring and the middle of that dark time and the time of regeneration of green things. This marks the flowing of the milk and the udders of the ewes and associated with the goddess Brid. With Patrick, the pagan deities took on a Christian identity. Many of Patrick's saints, like Saint Bridget, was the abbot of Kildare, but she was also the goddess of knowledge and life and the protector of the family against want and need, heroic and generosity. And Saint Columba, the warrior monk and a Druid poet. The Celtic goddesses were sexual creatures, while the Catholic saints that replaced them were not. This contributed somewhat, I believe, to the earthiness of Celtic spirituality. Since Ireland, like Scotland, was never conquered by Rome, Patrick brought Christianity to the Emerald Isles in the 400s. He had to convince the Irish rather than conquer them. In many ways, the Irish conquered Patrick rather than the other way around. Like many who brought Christianity to the heathen, he had to be humble himself and did so with a confession of his sins. He says in that, "I was a sinner, most unlearned and least of all faithful." When he was taken as a slave by Irish raiders and tended sheep in the Roman Wales or Northern Ireland. In the Roman Empire, Christianity had been made the state religion about 50 years earlier. Since Constantine, the emperors used Christianity as a way of solidifying the empire and holding the hearts of the people. Patrick had been taken to County Antrim, in the center of what is now Northern Ireland. The devotion we hear in his confession could easily be towards the government of Rome as any religious purpose. As a slave, Patrick tended the flocks mostly in his teens, and during these years he spent many time tending the animals and learned to speak the native Celtic tongue. In his years of lonely sheep shepherding, Patrick spent many hours in meditation and prayer and reflected on the beauty that is the Irish countryside. It is this experience of living with nature and meditating on the land around him that gives us much of that earthy feel of Celtic sense of the divine, which we heard in both poems and we hear in the music. This spirituality can be heard in one of Patrick's prayers, which was called The Blessings of the Munster People. A blessing on the Munster people, men, youth, and women. A blessing on the land which yields them fruit. A blessing on every treasure that shall be produced on their plain, without anyone being in want of help. God's blessing on Munster. A blessing on its peaks, on its bare flagstones, a blessing on its glens, a blessing on its ridges, like the sand of the sea under ships, be of the number of their hearts, on slopes, on plains, on mountains, on hills, a blessing. We can also hear the same respect for the simple life close to the land in a modern Irish blessing. May there always be work for your hands to do. May your purse always carry a shilling or two. May the sun always play on your window pane. May a rainbow chase after each spot of rain. And may the hand of a friend always be near. And may God hold your heart with gladness and cheer you. Patrick also learned about the Druid religion that later became part of that Irish Christianity. After about 5 years as a shepherd, he had a vision that he should escape and go back to the Christian world and serve his Christian God. He escaped his captivity and took the long journey to a seaport where he sought passage to Roman Britain. And arriving in Britain, he went to the continent and the north coast of Gaul and studied under a Saint Germanus and was ordained a priest. And he was charged to go back to Ireland as the Bishop of Ireland. And he went back to County Armagh in the north. Patrick had only studied for a few years, but before returning to Ireland, while he spoke Latin, and most of his writing was in Latin, and he was familiar with the Latin translation of the Greek scriptures, his written Latin was not the great scholarship which had been the custom of many of the priests who were sent out to convert the unbelievers. His portrait in Confessions was of an ignorant yokel, was somewhat accurate. Ireland prior to Patrick bringing the Roman knowledge of the country was prehistoric. It had no written language, but had a great oral tradition and a tradition of being great fighters. While the people were illiterate, they had great memorization skills, and Patrick learned much of the oral tradition and legend and tradition, as with the Blarney Stone, was a powerful way of winning the hearts of the Irish for Christianity than any scholarship would prove to be. Patrick was a teller of tales, and much success in winning the country for the church comes from this talent. This oral tradition and storytelling tradition is a part of Irish and Celtic spirituality. If any of you have read Frank McCourt's Angela's Ashes, you have some glimpse of the way the language formed a part of their spirituality. The two poems by John O'Donohue both point to the earth as a source and as a responsibility. In Irish spirituality, nature doubles for the divine. Sex becomes again a druid rite, which at one time I maintain that the Irish Christian authorities were so puritanical in trying to push out that ancient religion that that became the dichotomy within the culture. Irish poetry also combines metaphors of nature with intellectual and metaphysical topics. For instance, in the poem that Joe read, the carent of the ancient Irish boat was made of boughs covered with canvas and is said to bring St. Bernard, the navigator, on the expedition towards the New World and possibly the founding of Greenland. In Praise of the Earth, the poet defies the earth and earth processes. The Irish love to tell a story, and storytelling can be as powerful as anything found in scripture. Now you have had an understanding that Irish stories are all true, even if their facts may not be totally accurate. So were the stories about Patrick. It is said, for example, that he illustrated the concept of the Trinity to the simple pagans by showing them a shamrock, which is a three-sided figure, which became the symbol of the country. Ireland at the time was small fiefdoms, and Patrick would win over a druid king, and with his help would move on to that next fiefdom. But he would leave behind a fiefdom that was created with less war and without slavery that had brought him originally to the isle. As he left a region, he also always established a church and a school beside it. The schools were the monasteries of their day, which were not the large cloistered establishments of the Middle Ages, but small settlements that were by the fields that served to educate the people of the region. They were not isolated from the world. No vows were taken, and the clergy in his era were permitted to marry. The monasteries became associated with studious men and women who occupied their time in transcribing scriptures and cultivating such science as was known at the time and instructing the young. Part of the Irish spirituality is the relative equality of women, which was not found in the Romanized Church of Britain or the continent. This and the Druid influences made Patrick's Ireland less prudish than the Roman and Irish family size generally reflected a more sexual spirituality than less. Ireland's general isolation made changes, though generally slower. During his life, Patrick founded 365 churches, and each church rose beside a school. It was from these monasteries that classical knowledge was kept during the Dark Ages of Europe because of Ireland's relative isolation from continental influence. This tradition of scholarship is another legacy of the Irish spirit. And it is said that this is how the Irish saved civilization, by keeping classical knowledge in their monasteries. Patrick's ministerial career covered a period of 60 years. And in 489, Patrick died, and his tomb is in the town of Downpatrick in County Down. Today we celebrate St. Patrick with the green and other sensual pleasures like music and beer. And I find that while each village had a parish church, the real center of the village is the pub. I found it more inclusive than the English pubs, in that they not only welcomed dogs, but children also. Everybody entering was welcome to join in whatever music or storytelling would occur. Irish spirituality would link the growth of the spring crop of flowers to the health of the people. And like my story of the mortar and the chimney, Celtic spirituality with its prehistoric pagan roots forms the cement that holds the fabric of Celtic religion and the peoples together in an ever-evolving and never-ending world. Amen. And now for O Brother Sun.